What we are witnessing right now is the decimation of the country and people of Afghanistan. We are watching 20 years of work and the strengthening of a nation being destroyed in a single day. The Taliban has a hit list of known Christians they are targeting to pursue and kill. We are fully reliant on God, who is the only one who can and will protect us. The Taliban are going door to door, taking women and children. The people must mark their house with an X if they have a girl over 12 years old, so that the Taliban can take them. If they find a young girl and their house has not been marked, they will execute the entire family. If a married woman, 25 years or older, has been found, the Taliban promptly kill her husband, do whatever they want to her, and then sell her as a sex slave. Husbands and fathers have given their wives and daughters guns and told them that when the Taliban come, they can choose to kill them or kill themselves. It is their choice. That is apparently a first-hand report from a woman in Kabul sent to a friend of ours who worked in Afghanistan, who sent it on to us. It sounds, I think, too bad to be true. Although the Sun newspaper in the UK did report a similar thing last year. But if only half true, or true in just parts of the country, it's terrifying, isn't it? I was in Afghanistan some years ago. I was asked to go to Kabul and lead a retreat for the Christian workers. I went to their regular daily security update, where they were told where church will meet next Sunday. Because church never meets in the same place twice, because it's just too dangerous. They're told never to take the same route to work 2 days in a row. It's just too dangerous. Take a different route each time. Imagine living that way. Again, just so terrifying. I wrote in this week's newsletter about a theme in the papers this week, the theme of fleeing. People in Sydney told to evacuate their homes with the rising floodwaters. Hundreds of thousands fleeing the Ukraine as the brutal Russian army draws close. Again, how terrifying must that be? It just seems, doesn't it, so relentless. Just when we think the pandemic is running out of steam, there's an end in sight, and things might go back to normal, there are floods across Australia, war in Europe, maybe they're saying a European war, maybe even a nuclear war. Now, on the one hand, I don't want to talk about this. That's not why you've come to church, is it? It's to escape this, maybe. On a lovely Melbourne autumn day, when you're planning for lunch, do you want to be reminded of this? It just seems, doesn't it, so far away, floods and wars. But of course, fear and troubles are never far away. Maybe those ones are, but in our life there are always fears and troubles. So I thought this morning, why not? Let's hear a voice you don't hear on the 6 o'clock news, or you read in The Age, the voice of God. And find today comfort in the words of the wonderful Psalm 46, a psalm, I think, for scared people. It's a psalm, so it's poetry. It's full of imagery and metaphor. It's not news reporting, so don't take the pictures literally. And as with most of the psalms, we don't know the crisis that's prompted this psalm to be written. What's happening in Jerusalem that's caused the sons of Korah to write this psalm? Is it being threatened? Are the armies invading the city? Is it a political crisis? We just don't know. And that's deliberate. Because if we were told there is a, let's say, a military crisis, you might think, well, that's not threatening us. This psalm isn't relevant to us. But this psalm is relevant to any crisis, to people fleeing from floods or war, people facing cancer or Alzheimer's, a financial crisis, a domestic crisis, a church crisis. In any situation where metaphorically the earth is quaking and the waters are roaring, well, you might say metaphorically, my life is falling apart around me. I feel like I'm drowning and I can't come up for air. All is crashing apart. Here's a song you can sing. A song that reminds us of three great truths. God is in control. He will bring the crisis to an end. Trust him. It's a psalm in three stanzas. Stanza 1, verses 1 to 3, when the earth shakes. It begins with a statement of faith which covers the whole psalm, that famous statement, God is our refuge and strength, a helper who is always found in times of trouble. Here's the variant, our troubles. Here's the constant, our God. Today, the trouble might be a pandemic, or a flood, or a war, or a serious illness. Right now, in the New York Times bestseller list, is a book called The Body Keeps the Score. It's about the impact of trauma, physical or emotional, on your body. You toss and turn at night, you can't sleep. You lose your appetite. The body is breaking down. 2 years ago, before COVID hit, I was traveling all the time. I was so flat out, having a great time. I was stressed. And my body began to break down. I have a lung disease called bronchiectasis. It flared up. I got shingles. I got hives, all at the same time. I was getting up 4 or 5 times a night to go to the bathroom. I was stressed and the body was falling apart. The earth was quaking and the mountains shaking. That's the picture here. Yet through it all, God is our refuge and strength. That's the first stanza. Now we move to verses 4 to 7, and the change in mood is stark. If I imagine stanza 1 as a movement, if I imagine it as a symphony, stanza 1 is the loud drums and cymbals, the violins being played furiously, the trumpets and trombones at full blast, the conductor waving his hands around as the waters flood and the mountains shake. And God's people find refuge in him. But then with the second stanza, all is quiet. The conductor calls a stop. I now hear the gentle flutes, the violins softly strummed, the harps delicately plucked. As now we think, in the midst of the chaos, about the strong and secure city of God. There is a river. Its streams delight the city of God. Not a raging torrent, but a peaceful, flowing river. Now, if you've been to Jerusalem, you'll know that there is no river in Jerusalem. They don't have their Yarra. It's a picture, a metaphor of peace and prosperity, of life, of God watching over his people, providing their needs. All around them, the nations are raging and rising and falling. But God's city, his people, won't fall. For God is in the midst of her. And when the new day dawns, he will help her. So now we come to the final stanza, the triumphant last stanza. As God in the past was faithful, so will he be in the future. Come see the works of our Maker. But actually, he doesn't describe them to us. I thought he might. He had mentioned the day when the earth shook and the walls of Jericho came tumbling down. He could speak of the day when the waters thundered and Moses parted the sea. Of the days of David's triumphs over the enemies, how the Lord of hosts protected his people. But he doesn't. He just points us to the God who's in control with the majestic verse 10. Be still and know that I am God. Which must be the most misunderstood and misinterpreted verse in the whole Bible. How's it normally taught? Well, normally you hear it said, well, in the hurly-burly of life, chill out. Find a quiet place, a place of serenity. And there, as your soul is resting in God, hear his still small voice. Be still and know I am God. Well, there may be a time for that, but that is a far cry from what this writer intends. He's speaking to nations caught up in war, and he says, Mr. Putin, enough. Stop. When my kids were young, we had a Mitsubishi Star Wagon. We drive around, and in the back seats were my four children. It was chaos. The mountains were quaking and the waters roaring. They were screaming and carrying on and teasing and just going, and I'm trying to drive a car. So I'd pull over, switch off the engine, turn around and say to them, would I say to them, boys and girls, just be quiet. Still your troubled souls. Would I? No. I would say, and please excuse the language, shut up. I'm trying to drive the car. I'm your father. Be quiet now. The day had come when Julia Gillard couldn't stay quiet anymore. And she said, as you well know, I will not be lectured about sexism and misogyny by this man. That's the scene here. The day will come when God will say to Russia, Afghanistan, Syria, Sudan, enough. I'll destroy the weapons of your warfare. All the things you fear I'll bring to an end. And you will know I am God, exalted above the nations. And the psalm ends with that wonderful dream and picture, that wonderful hope of a day when he will break the bow and shatter the spear. Martin Luther King dreamed of a day like that, didn't he? He dreamed of a day, he said, when this nation will rise up and live out the true meaning of its creed. We hold these truths self-evident, that all people are created equal. He dreamed of a day when even the state of Mississippi would be an oasis of peace and justice and freedom. He dreamed of a day when he said little black boys and little black girls will hold hands with little white boys and little white girls as brothers and sisters. He dreamed of that day And 60 years later, we still have to be reminded that Black Lives Matter. John Lennon wrote and sang a song which was the anthem for his generation. Lennon imagined all the people living life in peace. He imagined nothing to kill or die for. He imagined no possessions and people sharing all the world. And years later, a man asked Lennon about the inconsistency of him living in a mansion and singing of having no possessions. And Lennon replied, and I'll remove the expletive, it's only a song. It's only a song, don't take it too seriously. Luther King can dream, Lennon can imagine, but in the end, that's all they really are, isn't it? Dreamings and imaginings. But one day, the world will come and see the works of our Maker. When Jesus comes, ends all wars and fighting, brings in a new age where death and crying and sorrow and mourning are no more, and he makes all things new. I love Psalm 46. But to be honest, I find Psalm 46 sometimes easier to sing than to believe, because I still get scared of the day the doctor rings, as he once did, or she once did, and said to me, "Michael, there's something we need to talk about. Can you come in?" I fear for my kids, my four kids, their physical and spiritual safety. Because I know that this psalm does not promise right now an end to my troubles. There'll still be pandemics. Floods will sweep away, fires consume. Economies crash. Businesses go bust. Marriages fall apart. Christians killed or persecuted for their faith. Even the great apostle Paul could confess at times of being overwhelmed by his sorrows and sufferings, even despairing of life itself. Now God is our helper in the midst of our troubles, comforting, supporting, preparing, keeping us for that day when he comes to shatter the spear and break the bow. We'll sing in a moment that great hymn by Martin Luther, "A Mighty Fortress Is Our God," based, as you probably know, on this psalm. Luther the Reformer had a tough life. Regularly, people tried to kill him. When things were hard, he would turn to his best friend, Philip Melanchthon. He'd say, "Come, Philip, let's sing the 46th. A mighty fortress is our God, a trusty shield and weapon. Let goods and kindreds go, this mortal life also. The body they may kill, God's truth abideth still. His kingdom is forever."